I'm Nina Whittaker and I help to run Stratton Craig, a Bristol-based communications agency. I've been working in the space for 11 years, helping corporate clients to communicate more effectively with a broad range of audiences.
I'm Claire Wilson and I've been agency side for 3 years, working with a range of clients, but previously I held senior communications roles in investment firms in London and Sydney.
So let's take a look at the agenda on the next slide. Today we'll be covering both written and oral communications, why it's important to get both of those right, and things to consider to improve your communication style. So starting with written communications, I'll hand over to Claire with the next slide.
Thanks, Nina. So I'm covering written communications for us today, but we did want to mention that the guidance that we're going to be sharing with you today actually applies to almost all types of communication. Often we find that people only take the time and the effort to really consider longer or more formal pieces of communication. But actually in our work, we know that almost every piece of communication and everyday things like emails or how you speak to people could be more effective and persuasive if we stop to think about it a little bit. So moving on to the first slide of my presentation. This is a gentleman called Steven Pinker. He's a cognitive psychologist and a popular science author, and he's got an idea called the curse of knowledge. And basically, the idea is that the more you know and the more you're surrounded by people who know the same things as you, the harder it gets to understand what a lay person will or won't understand. So I guess it's almost that we're so used to our own internal language that you don't become aware of what makes sense to anybody else anymore. The challenge with that is it means we need to be really, really careful about any jargon we're using, any of that language we use with other experts like us, but that normal people won't understand. And also, it means that we need to be really considering what our definition of jargon is, because it's probably too narrow at the moment. Probably some of the terms you use in your everyday work won't make sense to somebody reading the communications that you write. So what we say here is that jargon's fine between consenting adults, but sometimes it's impossible to know what your audience knows. And this is especially important if you're sharing complex ideas with people who don't have the same expertise as you. So moving on to the next slide, the rule we say is if there's a simpler way to say it, it's probably jargon. Let's try it with these words on the slide here. So if you like, you could pause your webinar for 60 seconds and just have a think about these words and think about whether there's another simpler way to say it or whether that's the only way to say it, and therefore it's terminology that we can't avoid. So starting with income-focused objectives, I think this one's pretty obviously jargon. I think there are simpler ways to say it. It could be as easy as the income needed or the income desired. The second one, notwithstanding, well, that's something we see quite a lot in legal writing. But again, usually in situations where there might be a simple alternative, whether that's although or despite, depending on the context. Now, catch-all clause actually might be something that you need to say that way. It's a specific thing, it has a certain purpose, and it might be terminology that you can't avoid. And in that situation, we just say explain it to people. If you need to use a language that is specific to your sector, just explain what it means to people who might not be in the sector. And again, the same goes for limited partnership. It's a specific thing, that's the right way to describe it, and it has particular consequences if you don't describe it that way. So again, if you can't get away from jargon and you can't avoid it, just explain it. So moving on to the next slide. This is important because so often people don't write well because they're trying to sound too clever. But ironically, some of the cleverest people know that that's not what works. Albert Einstein was famous for saying, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. And we see this very much true in all of the work we do with our clients. The people who've got a really strong grasp of a concept or an idea find a really easy way to explain it. And one of the things we often see when people are trying to sound too clever or corporate or professional even, is that they start including needlessly long, complicated words. And there's a good reason for this, and it goes back to the origins of English. When the Romans invaded in 54 BC, and then again the Normans invaded in 1066, the people of Britain, for the most part, kept speaking their Anglo-Saxon dialects, but it was the ruling classes, the clergy, the aristocracy, that learned Latin and French. But to this day, many of the words that we find view as quite formal or quite sort of authoritative have their origins in Latin and French, and it's this type of language that creeps in when people are trying to sound clever. On the next slide, I've put some examples. So on the left-hand side here, you'll see some of those words that people try and use when they're trying to sound particularly professional. I keep saying that word, but you'll see it in a lot of different situations. And on the right-hand side are the words that we use in more normal conversation. Now, we find this language on the left formal and stuffy because historically it was language that set the ruling classes apart. So an example of this, if I'm at home and I need to ask my husband to get me something, I'm unlikely to write him a note that says, "Dearest, when you next frequent a retail establishment, please obtain on my behalf a chocolate bar." Now, the problem with this type of language is that it overcomplicates communication. And by making it long and complicated, it makes it harder for the reader, in this case, my husband, to immediately understand what needs to be done, in this case, the chocolate bar. So clearly, there are times and places where the kind of language on the left-hand side of this list is appropriate and, in fact, expected. But outside of those narrow set of circumstances, this language often does more to hamper communications than help. And if the aim of communications is to be clearly understood, then often this isn't the right language to choose. We've all met that person who tries to be a little bit too clever, and usually it's because you'll find that they're jamming in words like this unnecessarily. But here's another clever person who knows that effective writing is clear writing. Switching over the slide, this is Warren Buffett, who had this lovely contribution to make to the Securities and Exchange Commission Writing Guide. When writing Berkshire Hathaway's annual report, I pretend that I'm talking to my sisters. I have no trouble picturing them. Though highly intelligent, they are not experts in accounting or finance. They will understand plain English, but jargon may puzzle them. My goal is simply to give them the information I would wish them to supply me if our positions were reversed. To succeed, I don't need to be Shakespeare. I must, though, have a sincere desire to inform. No siblings to write to? Borrow mine. Just begin with "Dear Doris and Bertie." So this is something we often find people choose to help them visualize their audience, think about who they're trying to write to. You could choose a family member if you like. Assume that they're intelligent, but not necessarily experts in your field. And then that helps you to understand which words you might need to explain or where you might need to simplify the language to make yourself more clear. So moving on to the next slide. This is really important about that clarity, because the most powerful and impactful writing is that which is easily understood by the person who reads it. If the reader understands quickly and easily what you're saying, they're more likely to trust your opinion and then be persuaded by your view. But how do we write clearly? On the next slide, I've included a helpful checklist that we find really useful. And I guess it's a little bit about challenging yourself when you've written something, just to go back and really check that you've done everything you can to make things as clear as possible. So starting with, how would I explain this to a smart person I know who's not an expert in this field? It's Doris and Bertie again. How do I start with what my readers don't know yet rather than what I know? And quite often when we go to write, we'll find that we try and write something we want to say rather than what people need to hear. And it's important to challenge yourself and put yourself in the shoes of the audience. Where are the points of greatest complexity so that I can slow down the pace of information? And have I used shorter words, sentences, and paragraphs at those points? So it's really important to be aware of where the ideas that you're trying to communicate get a little bit more difficult, and you can use language to make it extra simple at that time. Spend more time explaining, make sure you use short sentences and weeded out all the jargon. Which are the effective numbers? Is there data that can be better represented in an image or infographic or a list? Now, this is about using data to really clearly get our point across and make sure that you're not including data for the sake of it. It's about making sure it's doing the job that it's designed to do. And where is the jargon? Well, we've already talked about the curse of knowledge here. What can you avoid it, or what do you need to translate for people? Am I certain I found the one key piece of information I want to impart? What's the most important point you're trying to communicate, and how is the other information supporting it? And finally, can an analogy help you make an unfamiliar concept more familiar or tangible to the audience?
We'll actually come back to an example of that a little later on when we cover oral communications as well.
But finally, on the next slide, the most important thing you need to ask yourself, is my writing so clear the reader could pass along the most important information to another person? It's usually a great test of whether they've really grasped what you're trying to say. So on the next slide, I've included a simple tool that I often use as a writer. Research actually shows that the most effective writers spend up to 40% of their time planning their content, whereas only 25% of their time is spent writing, and then 35% is spent revising. Or as Abraham Lincoln was quoted, or misquoted, depending on which part of the internet you read, if I have 6 hours to cut down a tree, I'll spend the first 4 hours sharpening my axe. And it's the same approach when you're writing something. It can be really tempting to rush straight in and start writing straight away because you think you know what you want to say. But in my experience, taking that moment to pause and think really precisely about what I need to say and how best to structure it makes a huge difference in terms of saving time in the writing and then in the revising of it. So the way we do this in our company is we ask three simple questions. And the tool, by doing that, we help really identify what the most important parts of information are and exactly what we want to do from this piece of communication. So I ask, what do I want my audience to know? How do I want them to feel after they've read this? And importantly, what is it that I want them to do? It helps you get laser focused on exactly what you need to include before you start writing. So moving on to the next slide, I've included a scenario here that I think many of you could find yourselves in quite easily. There's a change to an important process at your firm. You've been asked to notify staff, explain the new process, and ask for their cooperation. So at this point, again, I'd like you to pause the webinar for a moment and take a minute to ask yourself, what do I want the audience to know? How do I want them to feel? What do I need them to do? So moving on to the next slide, let's run through it together now. What do we need them to know? Well, this could be that you need to let them know that the change is coming. It might be important to include the details of when a change comes into effect. You need to tell them what they need to do, what the change entails, and you might need to explain why the change is happening, especially if it's something that people might be resistant to. How do you want them to feel? Well, this is something that people often say to us, but it's a business communication. I don't have to care about how they feel. Actually, even in business situations, the people reading your communication are still people, and they will still bring their own stresses, assumptions, situations, and attitudes that you need to consider when you're writing to them. So in this situation, if there's a change that's come, and maybe it's hot on the heels of a series of other changes, and people might be a bit tired of it, the kind of thing you might want them to feel is understanding about why the change is happening. So you might want to share the reason for it, explain why, win them over to your point of view or persuade them that it's necessary and useful. Or you might want them to feel really comfortable that they have grasped the new process well and that they feel confident doing it themselves. And finally, what do we want them to do? Well, that's simple. We want them to follow the process and get it right first time. So this structure, although you may not realize it, can even help some of the smallest communications that we do, even everyday communications between colleagues, if you're writing to your teams. If you prioritize the information you need to include, it helps people understand immediately what they need to do with the information. And even if that's nothing, I find it really useful to say that up front. There's nothing worse than getting to the end of a 500-word email for it to say, for your information only, no action required. But in this scenario that we just talked about, you're also asking people to do something for you. And in these situations, it's really important to get your tone right because it can go easily wrong. And on this slide, we've talked a little bit about striking the right tone. Tone can be notoriously difficult to get right in writing. And that's because you don't have the tools of verbal communication to rely on. So body language, facial expressions, using your voice. But Nina's going to talk a little bit more about that later. So this makes your word choice and your language really important to set the right tone. Here are some examples of the difference this can make. The first example is a real life example from my son's school, who I often use as a role model for how not to communicate, unfortunately. So a reminder that parents are required to supervise their children at all times when attending the Christmas fair. So what makes this one so awful? I think it's the really formal language required to supervise feels really unnatural. I think they've also been excessively forceful or when they use language like at all times. And the effect of this is to make you feel like you've already done something wrong, that you've already been in trouble, or the only reason you're getting this email is because it was your child that burned the school hall last year. Whatever. With a few simple changes, the next, if you click through, you can see Remember, the teachers will be off duty, so you'll need to keep an eye on your children at the fair. It's just a small change, but it makes a big difference in asking for people's cooperation. And you can do the same thing at work when you've got situations where you need to ask for something. On the next slide, I've included an example related to the scenario we just talked through for the no feel do exercise. And the first example says, please ensure you familiarise yourself with the new procedure and follow it strictly at all times. So why does this feel like such a scold? Why do you feel like you're getting in trouble already? Again, I think they've used excessively formal language. Familiarise yourself doesn't feel normal. Excessively forceful again, strictly at all times, feels again like you're getting in trouble for something you haven't done yet. And what I also don't like in this one is that faux courtesy. Please ensure doesn't ever really feel polite. So with some small changes, we can make this a lot more amenable and I think more likely for people to cooperate with it. Take some time to learn a new procedure because we'll all need to follow it closely. So to summarize all my suggestions about how to improve your writing, go jargon free, or this is the last slide, go jargon free and really challenge yourself about what might be jargon to the audience you're speaking to. Chances are you need to be a bit more strict about your definition. Respect your audience's intelligence. Writing clearly does not mean dumbing something down. And write for clarity. Use a checklist if you need to, and remember to prioritize what your audience needs to hear, not what you want to say to them. They're not always the same things. And to help you do that, use our planning tool, the Plan for Impact. And finally, think about the tone of the language you choose. It can make a difference in the outcome you get. Now I'll hand over to Nina, who's going to talk about ways to improve oral communication.
Thank you, Claire. As we mentioned at the start of this webinar, much of the advice for written communication can also be applied to oral communication, avoiding jargon, planning ahead, and of course, considering your tone. We'll focus now on a few other factors to keep in mind when it comes to oral communications in presentations and meetings. On the next slide, you'll see a quote from a famous writer, George Bernard Shaw. He once said that the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place. The advantage we have in oral communication is that it gives us the opportunity to make sure what we are saying is heard and understood. The people we're communicating with are generally in front of us, albeit often on a screen at the moment, and so we're able to read their reactions and tailor our conversation as we continue. And in our next slide, we can see why that's so important. Research consistently finds that what you say isn't nearly as important as how you say it. In fact, 93% of effective communication is down to non-verbal signals, your body language and your voice. Just 7% is down to the content of what you're saying. Really effective communicators know this, and they use it to their advantage to make their communications more persuasive. So, starting with body language on our next slide, here's our own three-word slogan to help you navigate this. Eyes, face, and space. Maintaining eye contact isn't something that comes natural to everyone, but it's one of the best ways to engage with your audience. It demonstrates your interest in them, and it also gives you the opportunity to monitor the response to what you're saying. Always aim to make eye contact before you start speaking to someone. And in the early stages of your discussion, try to make eye contact with everyone in the meeting or with a couple of people in each area of the room if you're presenting. Introductions are obviously a really great way to do this. From then on, an easy rule to remember is the 50-70 rule. You should make eye contact for around 50% of the time when you are speaking and around 70% of the time when you're listening. Aim to hold eye contact for between 4 and 5 seconds. And a great way to break away naturally is to use gestures. Nod your head or use your hands. It's also important to be aware of your facial expressions. Avoid frowning or raising your eyebrows in surprise. And remember to smile when you greet someone or when you're communicating something positive. It may sound odd, but try to get to know your face. Practice delivering your presentation or a particular message in the mirror. If you want to capture your audience's attention, hand gestures can be really helpful in demonstrating something that is really important. And to show you're engaged, in return, leaning forward, nodding, and tilting your head are other non-verbal ways to show you're paying attention. In other situations, you may want to be deliberately not authoritative. For example, in a one-to-one with a colleague who's asking for your expert advice on a problem that they're facing. Sit back, unfold your arms, and mirror their expressions and posture to encourage open and honest conversation. And lastly, space. It's easy to make someone feel uncomfortable or disengaged if you invade their personal space. We've all been there. Obviously, this is very different in the age of COVID, but as a general rule of thumb, aim for at least 4 foot between you and the person you're speaking to. And if someone is leaning slightly away from you, it's very likely you're making them feel uncomfortable.
Actually, I had an experience of that. I lived for several years in Tokyo, where obviously you're catching the subway and you may be pushed onto a subway carriage with literally people up like this. And when I moved back to Australia, I realised that I was often violating people's personal space unintentionally. I just hadn't realised that my personal space settings had been changed.
That's a really good example. And thankfully, I think you've nailed that now. A great idea for anyone, we think, is to ask your trusted colleagues or your friends for feedback on your nonverbal communications. They're perhaps the best place to help you identify and improve your natural habits. Moving on to voice on our next slide. We think the main thing to remember is that it's very easy to underestimate how quickly we speak. In a public speaking or meeting environment, you will often have to slow down more than feels natural. This is about aiding accessibility and comprehension, particularly when your audience may not be experts in the subject matter, or maybe they're not all native speakers. And of course, with so many of our conversations now conducted through tools like Zoom, this is really even more important. Aim for a conversational pace. That's around 140 to 170 words per minute. But do use pace to demonstrate enthusiasm or urgency where necessary, or slow it down further when what you're communicating is particularly complex or if you want to emphasize your point. As well as slowing down, pausing is a really powerful tool in oral communication. It serves to silently re-emphasize your point and gives your audience the time to digest what you've said before you move on. You can also use those pauses to gauge the level of understanding and interest in the room. If your audience holds focus with you, it's a great sign. But if they fidget or if they look away, you may need to adapt your approach moving forward. Again, don't shy away from practicing preparation, even for a short conversation. You can record yourself or practice with a friend. We did exactly that for this webinar. Moving on, we know that often data can be a sticking point. When what you're communicating is data heavy, it's easy to confuse, bore, or overwhelm your audience. Cognitive studies have discovered that when we can't put a figure into terms of our everyday lives, we really struggle to engage with it. We can imagine 100 forks, for example, because both the fork and the relatively small number of 100 are familiar to us. But when it comes to something more unusual, like 2.5 quintillion bytes, we're unfamiliar with the measurement, the number, and the material, and it makes it really very difficult to engage with the information. Given the flood of data that we're all facing every day, if you want your audience to understand something important from the data you're showing them, you have to help them get there. Let's consider how we do that. It's generally not enough to just show them the graph or the table that you're presenting. You need to clarify what you want them to take away from it. Use data visualizations to emphasize and clarify your message. This can be particularly useful when you need your audience to understand multiple data points over a period of time.
Actually, I saw a really good example of this recently with the government's coronavirus briefing. And they've started using a heat map of the cases of coronavirus in different areas to demonstrate how it's growing over time. And I think it was the first time I really realised why the lockdowns were necessarily in certain locations, the difference of that, the caseload.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a great response to them recognising that people weren't engaging with some of the data that they were sharing and how they were sharing it. Analogies are also a really useful way to help your audience grasp unfamiliar numbers. In this example on the slide from one of our clients, it wasn't until we communicated the data in this way that their audience truly understood the global rarity of a 5-carat diamond. It turns out that the number of 5-carat diamonds recovered globally each year would fit inside a basketball. This isn't just about making things look good. It's worth investing the time and finding the right way to present your data in order to ensure your audience knows, feels, and does what you want and need them to. And lastly for today, on our next slide, remember that in a room of people, there will always be a range of communication styles at play. This might be less so speaking to a room of lawyers, but it will definitely be the case if you're speaking to a mixed group from across your organisation. It's not possible to tailor your content to be perfect for every style, but the most effective communicators provide information in different ways to meet a variety of needs. We find this model particularly useful and easy to use. So, for example, you could ensure you have a punchy, engaging headline for intuitives and include those data points and those visualizations for the analyticals in the room. Explain the process to help bring the functional personalities on the journey, and consider things like case studies or human quotes for those focused on the more personal aspects. In summary, it's important to remember non-verbal factors and the impact they have on your oral communication. Use your voice and body language to support and emphasize what you're saying, and bear in mind the need to bring your audience along with you. Ensure you present information and data in a variety of ways to meet their needs. Thank you for watching this webinar today. On the next slide, we just wanted to leave you with a little information about Stratton Craig and what we do. Our focus is predominantly on written communications, and we regularly run training courses for our clients to help them communicate better. And of course, we also do a lot of writing ourselves for printed and digital publications, but also for speeches, video scripts, and presentations. On our next slide, you can see some of the clients that we work with. We work in almost every sector, and there are some familiar names you might recognise here. As you can see, the vast majority of those clients work in technical, specialist sectors, and a huge part of our role is helping them communicate accessibly and engage with often non-technical audiences. We hope you found today's session useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.